Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Today's guest is a guy named Joe Polish. And if you haven't heard of Joe Polish, it's probably because you don't do marketing. Joe's one of the most sought after and experienced marketing guys out there. When I say marketing guy, you're probably imagining some, you know, click funnel, like do something online sort of thing. But Joe has helped literally hundreds and hundreds of entrepreneurs reach hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue, including me. He's been a friend and advisor for 5 years, introduced me to Richard Branson and Tony Robbins and John Mackey, the CEO of Whole Foods, and Arianna Huffington, and one of these people you might not have heard of, although Joe runs Piranha Marketing and has been very, very active in the business press. But if you're a biohacker or you're just listening about like what do high performance people do, Joe is a rare human being, incredibly impactful in the work he's done in the world, and has been incredibly open about his own challenges, going from like a guy with a mullet cleaning carpets, which is a true story.
Yes, it's relatively
and
true.
And his last name is Polish, which is just hilarious because you like actually polish floors. You've never heard that before. But anyway.
People actually thought I changed my name for the cleaning niche that I was originally in. But no, I was born with that name. I got made fun of as a kid. But then when I got into the carpet cleaning business, one of my first businesses, everyone thought I did it on purpose.
So it worked out.
Yes.
But one day, Joe had sort of just a business awakening, realized he could really help people with marketing. And has given away lots of exotic supercars and just had this story that's unbelievable. And I asked him to come on Bulletproof Radio today to talk about his path from basically humble beginnings and really some pretty hairy addiction stories that you just wouldn't believe. You're going to hear them all the way to being an incredible influential person in many, many people's lives and the work he's doing today around addiction. So if you're wondering, how do you go from literally rags and coke to riches. This is the man who did it and is now living a life of just incredible service to others. So, Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. It's my pleasure to be here, and we've been looking forward to doing this for a long time because it's been a while. And by the way, I have to excuse my voice for anyone listening right now because I've been running an event all day, so my voice is a little tired, but I'm super happy to be here.
Well, let's talk about this event. Joe runs an event called Genius Network, or also known as 25K.
Yeah.
And this is something that entrepreneurs at a certain level of success write a check every year for $25,000 to come to this. And a friend of mine, JJ Virgin, who's been on the show as well, said, Dave, you have to do this. I'm like, are you nuts? Like, do you know how much money that is? And you know, I started Bulletproof, I bootstrapped it and all that. I'm like, this is the single biggest check I've ever written. But someone I love and trust said, you got to do this. So I stepped up and I did it and came to this event. And literally, Joe, your work just changed my life. You introduced me to this whole universe of people who understood the mission that I was on and were just incredibly willing to help. And so I'm truly grateful for that. And 5 years later, I write my check every year with absolute gratitude. And the return on investment on that, which you promised everyone, is look, you get 10 times return or your money back. And it's actually like that. And I don't know how to put it another way. So thank you for that.
But totally. Thank you.
How did you get here? Like, just give me your background story. You've shared it over dinner, but where were you when you started all this?
Well, you said something interesting. You said, well, connect you with other people here. And it's interesting because it's funny that a lot of people now, I don't call myself this. A lot of people call me like a connector, like I connect people. And I really do. I get a joy out of it. And it's interesting because I grew up one of the most disconnected people ever. I mean, my real quick story, my childhood, my mother died when I was 4 years old. My mother was a former nun. She had left the convent because she had gotten ill. She met my father in church. They ended up getting married. I was raised Catholic. That instilled a tremendous amount of guilt in me. You know, without going into all the horror stories, lots of bad stuff happened as in my childhood. Bad stuff related to physical, mental, sexual abuse. I was raped and molested as a kid a few times. And I was, you know, just this lonely, shy, scared kid because my father never remarried after my mother passed away when I was four. And so I had an older brother who was 4.5 years older than me. And we just, you know, my father was a broken guy. He tried to do the best he could. He was a locksmith, never made a lot of money, but, you know, he took care of us as best as he could. But he was very heartbroken. He lost the love of his life. And so every 2 years, my entire childhood, we would move to a different city. So as soon as, you know, I just started establishing some relationships, we would uproot and go somewhere else. And that happened pretty much my whole childhood. And then, you know, things like my sports is an example. When I was around 10 years old in the small town, Alpine, Texas, when all the bad stuff was happening to me sexually, I had a sadistic little league baseball coach who would try to force me to hold the baseball bat straight up. And I was not some smart ass kid. I was just a shy kid. He just singled me out from the best of my memory. And I've very few memories of my childhood. A lot of it was blacked out. I just couldn't play the game. And so that episode ruined my liking of sports. I was never into sports. And to this day, I mean, I know a lot of professional athletes that are friends, but I've never been a person that really follows sports. And I also came home one day during around that time, and the only dog I ever had, the only pet I ever had, was a black Labrador retriever named Panther. And my father had just given my dog away that I had had for over a year. And I didn't realize until later in life, when I looked back at all of these dysfunctional coping mechanisms that I developed, first with drugs, and I'm happy to talk about any of this stuff, sure. And then, you know, sex addiction and workaholism and obsessiveness and just all of these maladaptive ways of trying to, you know, connect with something. I look back at all of the stuff that happened in my childhood, and I realize when people are going off the rails and being kind of dysfunctional, you can usually trace it back to the things that happened to them in childhood. And I certainly had those sort of experiences. Now, there's a lot of great things too. I mean, I built a multi-million-dollar business. I was a millionaire by the time I was 30 and all that sort of stuff. But it was a weird roundabout way. But I grew up lonely and disconnected and introverted. And I used to get picked on all the time. And I was a skinny little kid. And by the time I was, you know, 16 years old, you know, I just didn't really know how to relate to people all that well, did the best I could. But I started smoking pot. I started drinking alcohol. I started taking LSD. I started taking speed. And what happened is it opened up this whole world. All of a sudden, I went from being this shy, introverted person to being very outgoing. And I started feeling better. So initially, the drugs worked. I mean, they, you know, it's biochemical in a lot of ways. So the dopamine levels, whatever, however my body was responding to doing drugs, it actually worked. But as they say, you know, the like a coke addict is an example, the, you know, shortest line is too much and the longest line never enough, you know. Right. So basically, no matter, there was no moderation. And so what ended up happening is I just got deeply involved in doing drugs. And so for about 2 years between the ages of 16, 18 years old, it just escalated and got worse and worse and worse. And in my worst possible state, there was one week where I had not eaten for several days. And on average, I weighed 120 pounds when I was 18 years old. I was doing so much, so many amphetamines. I was snorting crystal meth. I was snorting coke. And there was a period right after high school when I was 18 that I weighed 105 pounds at my worst day from just doing freebasing cocaine for 3.5 months straight. So that's that story.
Joe, I like to look at human resilience and ways we can make people more resilient. And with your story, by all rights, you should either be dead or in prison.
Absolutely. Right?
And instead, you're a multimillionaire and you help a lot of people do a lot of good. And I want to know and learn from your experience, what's different about you or what you did that kept you off that path and turned you into the admirable and fantastic human being you've become? Like, what did that?
It's a good question. And I wish I could point to like one thing or one episode or one spiritual awakening or something, because people have asked, what was the one thing that did it? You know, it was a whole series of things. I mean, the human spirit is resilient. The human body is quite resilient. I mean, with all of the work you do in the health field and all of the things that you've learned, and I've learned a tremendous amount from you. I mean, we've done 40 years of Zen with you. We've done a lot of great stuff. We've gone, you know, on an amazing trip in Alaska, which we're going to do again. You know, there's all kinds of cool stuff we've done. But to go back to when I was in my worst physical shape, and I'll tell you, I mean, I'm not saying these stories for just for morbid curiosity. It was just to give a context. One day, I remember in a single day, I was smoking cigarettes, drinking alcohol, smoking pot, snorting crystal, snorting cocaine, and freebasing. And I was on LSD.
In one day?
In a single day.
Gotcha.
And so like, how much abuse could you give a body, right? And I would blow my nose and pieces of flesh would come out, blood. Wow. And one time I had to, I rode my bike around the block and I was 18 years old and I could not even breathe after riding my bike. I mean, my lungs were so damaged. And looking back, I was like, yeah, I should be dead. I cannot believe, you know, that much abuse. What ended up happening was I literally, it got so bad where I looked in the mirror and I looked like a skeleton. And I had one episode where a person that we had as a roommate was flipping out, nearly burned the house down. And I just said, I got to get the hell out of this environment or I'm going to die. So I packed up a pickup truck, drove to Las Cruces, New Mexico, and ended up living in a trailer for a couple of years with my father and got sober. I removed myself from the friends, from the environment, from the drugs, and I just simply had to change the environment. And that gave me enough space to not have access to drugs, but the mental withdrawals, the physical withdrawals were pretty severe. And I didn't go to a treatment center back then. I didn't even go to 12-step groups back then. But what happened was I was taking aspirin or Tylenol almost daily just to try to deal with the headaches and stuff. And eventually, you know, I kind of got through it. And then I got a job at a health club selling gym memberships. And I, for the first time in my life, I started exercising and started working out and started feeling what it felt like to actually get in physical shape. And I worked there and I was very successful. I learned about selling and that you can persuade people by the words you use and by talking with them and leading them into something that I was getting benefit from myself, which gave me my first experience with selling. And while I was there, I met a guy that ran a mental hospital and he offered me a job as a mental health tech. So I started working in this mental hospital and I would drive the patients that had addiction challenges to AA meetings, Alcoholics Anonymous, and NA meetings, which is Narcotics Anonymous. And I would sit in those meetings because I was the driver, but never realizing that later in life, that community in those stories and hearing people, you know, that were sharing their pain with others, that would become so valuable in my life. And so when I ended up moving back to Arizona, which is where I live today and have lived most of my adult life, I never got a degree in anything. I mean, I have to tell this story too. I went to Chandler Gilbert Community College and I got a C- in principles of marketing and I failed owning and operating a small business. So I even show my report card when I speak. People are like, what are your education? I'm like, Abe Lincoln, I'm self-taught. I mean, I never got a degree in anything, but I've read over 1,000 books and I've gone to a lot of seminars. And so one of the things was I was always super curious about just how do I get out of this trap? How do I become more successful? So I was a big reader. I don't remember anyone in my childhood that was a mentor or a teacher or anyone that had any significant impact. Not saying they weren't there, I just don't recall it. I just literally found my mentors and I found my inspiration in books and I would read. And eventually I, you know, just started following different people and, you know, some of the same stuff you've done. I mean, Tony Robbins, who's now a dear friend of mine, you know, I was listening to Tony Robbins tapes when I was, you know, getting out of that mess, and Wayne Dyer and reading Think and Grow Rich. And so all of that sort of stuff. But when I came back to Arizona, I ended up starting a small carpet cleaning business because I had a friend who I went to high school with, who talked me into taking all the money that I had saved, from all these different jobs, and I spent $1,500, which is all the money I had, and I bought a portable steam cleaning unit. I got some business cards that said professional carpet cleaner, and overnight I was a business owner that didn't know what the hell I was doing. And my friend who started the business with me, he said, you know, what we'll do is I'll start making phone calls, because he was working for a company in Arizona that the guy was an alcoholic that owned the company, but he had grossed $600,000 the previous year and had a phone room where they would call people. And looking back, I didn't know anything about how do you run a small service business, but they were kind of like low price, getting people's houses, and they would, you know, hopefully sell them stuff. It wasn't full-blown bait and switch, because there are a lot of people that advertise, you know, $595 a room, $695 a room, and anyone has probably seen those sort of coupons. And those people are basically scam artists. They just use low prices, and then they do high-pressure selling. And I never did anything like that. I just had this friend who's like, yeah, I'm going to make the phone calls, we'll get some jobs, and then once we get established, we can hire, you know, a few gals to make the phone calls, and then we'll clean the carpets and build up crews. But after about 2 months of being in business with this guy, every night he was basically getting drunk, and I was, of course, you know, had gotten sober, and so I took his name off the business account, and I was stuck with this chemicals and equipment and this carpet cleaning business, and I didn't really have any options. So I just started knocking on doors and going to apartment complexes. This is a funny story. So in Arizona, you know how hot it can get here in the summer, right? It's like Hades. It's pretty damn hot. And I'm allergic to cats. And back then, I would clean these dirty apartment units, because they are at least the ones that would give me consistent business. They would pay me $20, $25, $30 per unit to clean these units. And I would be there 10 hours, 12 hours, 14 hour days. In the middle of summer, some of these units didn't have any air conditioning because the electricity was off. And so I would run an extension cord to some of these third story apartments. I'd have to lug this steam cleaning thing in buckets of hot water up the stairs, you know, clean the carpets, and in a cat infested apartment where there's cat urine and all this stuff, I would be literally doing hard manual labor, and I would be wheezing. So it was like doing...
So your life was basically shit.
Oh, it sucked. It totally sucked. But I had this entrepreneurial fantasy that, like, damn it, I don't want to work for anyone. I want to make this thing work. And on top of that, I so badly wanted to just figure out how to make a business work that I was paying money to do that work. I mean, there's many ways to go broke, but doing hard manual labor, cleaning carpets, and going into debt on credit cards is one of the stupidest ways to go broke. But that's what I was doing. I wasn't intelligent enough to say I could probably just sit at home and watch TV and go broke. I didn't have to do hard manual labor. But I amassed about $30,000 in debt over a couple year period, and I was just frustrated. And I can keep telling you my story, but I want to take a break just to make sure you...
It sounds like twice in your life, like once when you're about 18, you sort of hit rock bottom from just a health and an addiction perspective, and you climbed out of rock bottom. And then from a business perspective, you hit rock bottom and you climbed out of it. And this is a common pattern, though. You see this over and over where people lose money in businesses, or they have addictions, and it sort of sticks with them.
Yeah,
but I've known you for 5 years now, and you live an unusual life, and that you're always meeting amazing people and helping them, and you sort of just walk around, and everyone's like, "Do you know what Joe did for me?" You got from hard physical failure and hard business failure, and something happened. You read these 1,000 books and all that stuff, but what was the spark that made you go, you know, I'm going to not just become a little bit successful, but just like abundance opened up for me.
Yeah, well, I've always been interested in massive significance, and I don't like things that are mundane and mediocre, and there's a lot of pain and suffering in the world, and I certainly have had those plenty of experiences, and I am driven to, and I say driven hopefully in a good way, because people can be very driven in a very destructive way, and a lot of my upbringing, my drivenness actually led into driving into walls, driving off cliffs, and being very self-destructive to myself. But I have this deep internal thing to where I want to reduce human suffering. And so it first had to start with me. I want to connect people, but it first had to start with me. And so one of the big distinctions, which, you know, kind of where I was at in my carpet cleaning business, when I was in the worst possible state, I was frustrated. I had a guy call me, a friend from high school, and he said, "Would you like to go jet skiing?" And when you're totally broke, you don't have any discretionary income. You don't have any money to do stuff. And he said, "You know, would you like to go jet skiing?" I'm like, "No, I got a lot of work to do." I didn't want to admit that I can barely even pay for anything to eat. And he said that the guy that owns the jet skis is a multi-million dollar real estate investor. And that, of course, piqued my interest. I'm like, oh, maybe I could go and meet this guy and talk with him and he could give me some advice on what sort of business I could go into in order to get out of this damn carpet cleaning business that clearly wasn't working. And so we went to Saguaro Lake, which is a lake out here in Arizona, and there were two jet skis. There's my friend Pat, and then this guy that had that was the wealthy real estate investor had two jet skis, and one of his friends was with him. And so my friend Pat and this guy's other friend were on the jet skis, and I finally had a chance to sit down with this wealthy guy in the tailgate of a pickup truck. And I said to him, you know, so I hear you do really well in business, and I have this small carpet cleaning business, and it's not doing that well. And if I was wondering if you have any recommendations of another business that I could go into so I could, you know, maybe do better.
So he asked for help.
Yeah. So, well, and so what he said, he goes, well, is there anyone in your business that's making money? I go, well, yeah, there's several companies in the Phoenix area that do over $1 million a year. That's a lot of money to me, but they've been around a long time. They're established. I've only been doing this for a couple of years. You know, I'm good at cleaning carpets, but for some reason they just, you know, they're established. And he said, well, if there's other people in your business that are making money and you're not, there's nothing wrong with the business you're in. There's something wrong with you. And I said, well, no. I mean, these people, they have a lot of staff. You know, a lot of them do bait and switch advertising. I don't do any of that sort of stuff. I'm trained. I'm certified. It's just that, you know, I was making excuses because when you're a hard worker and you actually care and you're still not successful, it really messes with your head because there's a lot of really good people that put forth the effort and they don't get results. And they're like, what the hell is going on?
You ever see the monkey video with the banana versus the grape versus the cucumber?
I wish I could say I have, but I'm not.
This is what was happening to you. And you can Google this thing. We'll Google it afterwards. We'll put a link in the show notes. But it's some psychologists and they have two monkeys in cages where they can see each other. Mm-hmm. And they're trained to like reach out and like grab a rock and put it in a bowl. You put a rock in a bowl, you get a treat. So the first monkey gets a cucumber as a treat and is perfectly happy. The monkey next to him does the same task and gets a grape, which is sweet and good. And the first monkey's like, you see this look of like what? He got more. Like, we both worked hard.
Right.
And then they go back to the first monkey and he puts the thing in a rock again and he reaches out his hands and they give him a cucumber and he looks at the cucumber and throws it at the researcher. And it just like goes nuts and tries to break out of the cage. It just goes into this rage because he didn't get a grape because he worked just as hard as the guy next to him.
Wow.
And like, it really, it pushes our primal things, right?
Totally.
And that's what's going on with you.
Yeah. So the lesson here, I didn't know this yet, but this was going to become the most important mentor at that time in my life as it related to a direction that I was going to take. So here I was, dead broke carpet cleaner, talking with this guy on, you know, trying to get some advice. And he says, you know, young man, you're like most people. You think the grass is always greener on the other side. And what's going to happen if you try to go into another business, another industry, you're going to spend another 6 months, another year, another 2 years learning the technical skills of another business so you can go out and repeat the same bad business habits that have caused you to be a failure in this business.
Wow, that was some powerful advice.
Totally. And I was like, well, at first I was like, well, shit, that's not the motivational message that I want. But what he helped me identify was there's other people that are successful. They're doing well. I'm not. There's something they're doing that I'm not doing. So what the hell is that? So when I left that trip, I was super sunburnt and I was driving home and I was thinking to myself, I live in America. I think it's a great country. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I have tons of personal problems. You know, I have my own, you know, issues and stuff. However, you know, I've got my limbs, I've got my vision, I've got my hearing. I'm a hard worker. Someone knows what the hell to do. So that started me on my venture of saying, I'm going to figure this out. And here's what I did, though. I made a commitment that I don't like the business. I'm not doing well, but other people are having success in it, and I'm not. I'm going to figure out how to make it work. So all of a sudden, I reframed the business and the failure as like, this needs to be a canvas. I need to use this as a lab rat. This needs to now become an experiment. I'm going to figure out how to make this thing work. And I made a commitment to myself that I am not getting out of this business until I figure out how to turn this business around. And because what he said to me, he goes, if you learn fundamental business skills, you can then go into any business and you can apply that. And so I was like, I got to use this carpet cleaning business as a place to test things out. And now what's funny is I happen to, you know, get into a business selling something nobody wants to buy. I mean, there's not anyone that's listening or watching to this that has any, you know, excitement about calling a carpet cleaner. It's kind of like going to the, you know, if you live in America, the Department of Motor Vehicles and get a license renewal. I mean, it just sucks. And so people don't love cleaning carpets like they like going to a comedy club or going to a movie or buying clothes. So, but here I was with this accidental industry that I was in. And so what happened was I just started reading. I started studying. And I had a friend that gave me a newsletter written by this crazy marketer named Gary Halbert. And it was called the Gary Halbert Letter. And I ended up reading this newsletter. And there was something that was said in the very first issue that I read, which is the February 1992 issue of the Gary Halbert Letter. It said that smart people would rather pay $1,000 for 10 pages of really valuable information than $10 for 300 pages of fluff. And so you don't measure the value of information by, you know, quantity, but by the quality of the information. And it said that it made a distinction of what marketing is, that you need to can and clone yourself. And that whole term can and clone yourself, I learned what marketing actually is versus selling. Because selling is what you do when you're on the phone or face-to-face with somebody. And marketing is what you do to get yourself on the phone or face-to-face with somebody properly positioned. So by the time they talk to you, they're pre-interested, pre-motivated, pre-qualified, and predisposed to do business with you. And all of the advertising or marketing that I was doing, because I didn't even know what marketing was. If someone would have said that term, does that mean a logo? Does that mean a brand? What the hell does it mean, advertisements? I mean, what does it actually mean? And again, this was before the internet even existed. So we're talking the way people got business back then were yellow page ads, Valpak type coupons, magazine advertisements, sometimes TV, sometimes radio, newspaper ads. You know, you're talking about a small service business. And so I didn't even know how to create an offer. And what most people were doing was they were advertising price. And what most industries do is everyone copies what everyone else is doing, and they're all kind of doing the same dumb things. And so back then, I didn't quite know what to do. But when I read that term, can and clone yourself, I started studying and reading all of the books that Gary would recommend, like Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins, the Robert Collier Letter book, you know, How to Write a Good Advertisement by Vic Schwab, Ogilvy on Advertising by Dave Ogilvy. And so I started reading all of these books about making offers. And I hired a copywriter with money that I had to borrow on a credit card. I paid a copywriter $1,800 to write my very first sales letter for my carpet cleaning business, which was, you know, a consumer guide to carpet cleaning. And everyone was running name, rank, serial number ads, who they are, what they do, and their phone number. Today, it's kind of what they do, you know, in their website or their social media or whatever. Same stuff that most businesses still don't know how to create advertising. And so I created this education-based marketing guide, and I started running, you know, ads that said, you know, warning, don't call any carpet cleaner till you, you know, read this consumer guide. And I would have people call and request a consumer guide, or if people called me up on the phone and say, how much do you charge? That question, when someone asks how much you charge, they don't have any other criteria on how to make a buying decision. And so if you don't have a system for selling what it is you're selling, you're always at the mercy of the consumer system for buying, which is always price, unless you give them another criteria. So I'll just rattle through this real quick, and then I'll then share how that led to what I do today. Yeah. So basically, I created Consumer's Guide to Carpet Cleaning. Read this guide and discover 7 questions ask a carpet cleaner before you invite him into your home. 8 mistakes to avoid when choosing a carpet cleaner. Crawling Critters and Crud, a guide to the slime, grime, and livestock that's seeping, creeping, and galloping through your carpet. How to avoid 4 carpet cleaning ripoffs, the difference between value and price, how to get your carpet cleaner to 100% guarantee their work, all this stuff. And then they would open up this little guide. And unlike every other form of advertisement, which looks like we're trying to sell you something, a fancy brochure, this was inexpensive. It was, you know, paper and ink. But the thing is paper's expensive, ink's cheap. So the message that you put on it, like a dollar bill, what's the difference between a $1 bill and a $100 bill? The message on the paper, same ink. Why is one worth 100 times more than the other? It's because of the words. It's because of how you position it. And so I started learning that you could influence, you know, the effectiveness of something just by the copy, just by the words, just by the offer. And so they would open up the guide and it says, dear homeowner, choosing a carpet cleaner isn't easy. Why? Because you're bombarded with confusing claims, simply bad information, near worthless methods, unqualified technicians. How do you ever find a qualified, competent carpet cleaner? You start by reading this guide. And then it said, now with this information, you can make an informed, intelligent decision. And that's key, because people don't want to make an idiotic, uninformed decision. They want to make an informed, intelligent decision. And so I answered the number one question in all consumers' minds, which is, who can I trust? And so I gave them all of the information. And so money earned ethically is a byproduct of value creation. And you actually can create value before anyone even does business with you by teaching them how to make a buying decision. So what I learned, when you're selling something that nobody wants to buy, what you do is you help them learn and know all the things that they don't know that they don't know. And so once somebody read my consumer awareness guide, they didn't call me up and say how much you charge. They would call up and say, when can you do the job? But people would call up and say, well, you know, I need my carpet cleaned tomorrow. You know, if they were, and I'm like, so what I then did is I paid the copywriter another $250, and I had him turn my consumer awareness guide into a 24-hour free recorded message script. And then I did a 10-minute recorded message, and I would run the ads that said, warning, don't call any carpet cleaner until you listen to this free recorded message. Call anytime, 24 hours a day. And so they would call and listen to a robot that would sift, sort, and screen price shoppers. It was totally robotic. It was automated. It always delivered a perfect pitch. It never bitched about a headache. It would always show up to work on time. It was automated. And I call that today elf marketing. So you can have an elf business, which is easy, lucrative, and fun, or you can have what I used to have before I learned all this stuff, a half business, which is hard, annoying, lame, and frustrating, or hard, annoying, lucrative, and frustrating, which is the subject of my new book that's going to be coming out soon, which is called The Average Joe's Marketing Book. Very clever. But anyway, I literally created this system, and then I went from $2,100 a month on average, losing money. Gross. I was grossing $2,100 a month. It cost me more money to be in business, to over $12,300 a month within a six-month period. And I didn't learn any much more about how to clean carpets, although I was certified and I was trained and I did a good job. I learned there's no relationship between being good and getting paid. Now, let me explain that in the right context, because a lot of people are like, well, that doesn't make sense. Some people are really good and they get paid because they're in a certain type of supply and demand situation. But there's a great relationship between being good, being a good marketer, and getting paid. And what I mean by marketing is, you got to get your message out. You have to tell your story. You have to be compelling. You cannot bore people into buying. And so I created this way of using education-based marketing, and I turned my small carpet cleaning business around. And then I decided, wow, you know, how many other people like me that are struggling, that don't know how to do this, if I could just teach them what I've learned here, they would apply it in their business. And so I started running ads in carpet cleaning trade magazines. I ran my first ad in a magazine called Clean Facts Magazine at the end of 1994. I ended up running this ad, and the ad said, how to get a flood of new customers. You know, my name is Joe Polish. I've learned this method of, you know, how to generate business. And the big money is not in carpet cleaning. It's in the marketing of carpet cleaning services. And that discovery changed my life. Call this free recorded message to request a free report. And so people would call and they would request a free report, but the free report would tell my story. It was like a 12-page to 26-page sales letter, because I had different versions of this very long copy, and I would send it, and I ended up generating leads off a $138 regional ad in this trade magazine. And I ended up generating leads, sending these people a free report, and the free report, the first time I did it, generated $7,000 in sales, because I offered a $497 course and a $597 course, and I was pretty much off to the races.
So it took you, what, another year or two to become a millionaire?
Well, the first year I sold $250,000 worth of these marketing courses when I was 26 years old. And the beauty is the materials worked. I mean, I'm...
You added real value.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I transformed people's businesses. And I mean, they were applying it and I was changing people's lives. And I literally ended up over 1,200 carpet cleaning companies purchased my materials within the first couple of years. The second year I sold $500,000 worth of courses. The third year I was doing over $1 million a year. And so I became a millionaire by the time I was 30.
How did you avoid taking all the money and going back to hookers and blow?
Well, here's the deal. So during this period of time, I had never dealt with a lot of childhood trauma. And when you are sexually abused, you have an arousal template. And so what someone is into sexually is usually based on how they were first introduced to sexuality. And I had sexual addiction, by the way, is an intimacy disorder. When people hear it, they can conjure up all kinds of perceptions of what does that mean? Because all forms of addiction include suffering. All forms of addiction are disconnection. All forms of addiction include binging and purging. It's not about moderation. It's either deprivation or it's excess. And so one of the forms of addiction, sexual addiction, was being sexually anorexic, not having the ability to be intimate with someone or be intimate with someone that matters. Because if you look at men or women that were abused as children, they will usually develop relationships with abusive partners.
Right.
And it's a trauma bond. And so luckily for me, I don't ever recall ever being abusive to anyone physically or mentally. I'm sure, like, you know, I was an asshole in a lot of ways and unaware in a lot of situations. But I mean, here in my life, I mean, every girlfriend, every partner I've had for the last 18 years, other than one of them, I'm still friends with all of them. A lot of them are friends with each other. You've even witnessed
that. I've met a couple of them, and they say nothing but good things about you.
Yeah. And then so I've really done my best to try to be just a kind human. But what happened is I ended up getting in a very toxic relationship during this time with a woman that we should have separated after the first year, but we stayed together for about 6 years. And this is a long story, but I'm going to give you the real quick Reader's Digest version. Is if there's younger people, they probably don't even know what Reader's Digest means. But anyway, so we ended up having a child together, and at a time when I was actually going to separate from her, and I ended up staying with her because of this. And what ended up happening was we did not get along at all. We ended up having this child together, and every moment with her was just not, it was miserable, but I love this child. And in the process of raising this child, it was intolerable to be together. But, you know, I love this baby 20 times more than any woman I'd ever been with. And, you know, we ended up separating, and I was, you know, got her a new apartment and leased her a car, and I was taking care of her and the child, trying to figure out, you know, how do I navigate this? And so this is part of my life where I'm helping business owners, I'm having success, but my personal life is just kind of in shambles. It's just real difficult. And what I found about a lot of successful entrepreneurs is they could have a lot of these secret lives where no one really knows all the shit storms that are going on. And so what ended up happening was she wanted to move out of state, and in not realizing that I'm supporting you and I'm, you know, the father here. And what ended up happening was I joined a father's rights group because I wanted to see what I need to do in order to prevent her from moving out of state. And they recommended that, you know, I read a lot of materials to prepare myself if we have to go into a legal custody issue, because I, you know, they're like, what do you want to do? I said, well, I just want to, you know, both of us, I feel, should raise this child. And in the process of, going down this road, they said, well, you know, read all these materials, take a DNA test because it'll help you if you ever go to court. And I'm like, oh, I don't need to do that. But they're like, no, it'll actually help you. So I ended up taking the DNA test. And again, I'm so hesitant to not tell more because it kind of fills in the blanks. But I ended up finding out 5 days before this child's first birthday through a DNA test that I didn't even, it only took because I thought it would help with custody. I never questioned that I was not the father. I found out I was not the biological father.
Wow.
And it was the most pain mentally that I had ever ever felt. I mean, you know, both my parents passed away and I've had lots of friends die and stuff. Nothing compares to how that loss. I feel like I lost, you know, I did. I actually lost a child that I cared for. I offered to adopt this child because at that point I was bonded with this child, but, you know.
You had no rights.
Yeah, I mean, I even offered her $100,000 if she would, like, sign away rights and let me raise the child. And she wanted the money, but she didn't want to be without the child. And there's nothing I can do. And so what happened is the only thing that made the pain go away was to sleep with a lot of women. I started paying for sex, hiring escorts, and, it was pretty painful. And so I didn't go back into the drugs. But I certainly went into the core addiction, which actually stemmed from the trauma as a child. And that's what people's addictions and crazy making behaviors usually goes to, where the biggest source of pain was.
One of the reasons that I wanted to ask you about these things is that you're a multi-multimillionaire and you have incredible influence and, you know, the ability to pick up your phone and call God knows how many billionaires and captains of industry and all. And you're willing to stand up in front of these guys and talk about really uncomfortable, shitty situations you live through and just own it and be like, this is the person I am today.
Yeah.
And one of the things that taught me, and having come to know some small percentage of the number of these people that you know, is that most people have a lot of crap in their background that they don't want to talk about and things that they're ashamed of, and it causes them pain, even though they're externally successful or successful in one domain, not another domain. And I think that by just being willing to say, hey, I'm a really successful guy, and I live through all this stuff, and I'm still dealing with it in this way today, that you've actually made it safe for a lot of other successful people to get help or to talk about, gee, maybe I really do have an addiction to my business or an addiction to something that maybe they didn't see was an addiction.
Yeah.
And now you've made this your moonshot based on like the kind of Dan Sullivan, Peter Diamandis kind of thinking. Both of whom have been guests on the show, and both of whom you introduced me to. And you're now focused very heavily on addiction and what you can do to rid the world of addiction. Talk with me about how that became your mission and what you're doing about it.
Yeah, and thank you, by the way. And so, yes, my moonshot is to change the global conversation about how people view and treat addicts with compassion instead of judgment, and to find the best forms of treatment that have efficacy and share those with the world. And also, let me say this. I'm not a dummy. I know how to do sales pitches. I could use this platform and say, hey, I'm this great guy. I know all this marketing stuff. You should opt into my list. You can buy things. I can teach you how to make a lot of money, and I can do all that. I know all that, but I know you, and I know that you care a lot about this because we've had private conversations about this, and I've heard the things on Bulletproof, your show, and about how you've brought up addiction and how you've brought up challenges and how you've talked about stuff. And you've always been super acknowledging of me and the people that have introduced here. And so my whole thing is I'm thinking of like whoever's out there fighting a silent battle, whoever's in pain, whoever's a real, because you have a lot of very successful people that listen to you and that follow you. And a lot of these people have these secrets that they don't share. And so you're as sick as your secrets. And so I wanted to take this time to actually not talk about how cool, someone may think I am and all the famous people that I know, and I have plenty of that sort of stuff, and I do run the highest level marketing group in the world and all that. It's great. But the bottom line is, like, I had to go through a shitstorm of stuff.
Suffered a lot, man.
Yeah, and so I want to, the opposite of addiction is connection. And so I ended up building the biggest connection group because I was so disconnected as a kid. And I think once I learned marketing, I looked at this issue, which I think addiction is the modern form of human slavery, and how do I use my marketing skills, my storytelling skills, my connection skills, and how do I become a curator and bring some of the greatest minds, some of the greatest thinking, and try to solve this issue, which right now we're treating addiction punitively. The criminal justice system in America is treating addicts when it needs to be a more compassionate industry.
It's evil what they're doing.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to probably look back in this and see, like, wow, we used to throw people in cages because they were traumatized. Because, you got, like, in America, there's 2.3 million people that are in prison, 0.91% of the U.S. population. There's another 4.5 to 4,750,000 people that are on parole or probation. I mean, depending on different towns, different cities, you can walk around and statistically 3 to 5 people are freaking criminals. And 80 to 90% of people that are arrested or thrown in jail, alcohol or drugs were involved. That's not including behavioral issues like the internet or porn or sex or gambling or gaming or food or workaholism, which is the respectable addiction. So a lot of these people that are, they're obsessive, there's compulsivity, and a lot of these people are really functional. I was very functional when I was an addict. So the key is, man, if you can actually build businesses and do cool stuff while you're going through all these struggles, imagine how much more effective you would be if you could deal with this sort of pain. So
you've really led just that incredible life. When you decided to stand on stage in front of a room full of people who write large checks to you, and a lot of these people are also big donors and people running companies with tens or hundreds of millions of dollars revenue in the room, and just stand up and be like, oh, by the way, I didn't really tell you guys about like these dark chapters of my life.
Yeah.
What thought process did you go through before you first were like, I'm going to sort of just, I don't know, come out of the closet might be the wrong word, but you know, I'm going to just basically expose this part of my background to all these people. Like, were you worried?
Yeah, you know, I was incredibly worried because there's a lot of shame attached to it. A lot of these things opened me up to be picked apart and say, and ridiculed. And certainly the more I do this, I'm sure that can happen and will happen, and people are going to misinterpret stuff. And I'm willing to use my platform, and you know, hundreds of thousands, millions of people have downloaded my podcasts and stuff. And you know, I'm Richard Branson's largest fundraiser. I have a lot of access to people, and most people in these positions, they don't talk about this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's the exact reason I wanted to start talking about it, because that which is most private, or at least feels most private, is actually most public. And I have some unique perspectives on stuff, because in the early 2000s, when my life was a train wreck, after that situation where I raised that child, I then turned my company over to a woman to run it who, you know, was a Jehovah Witness, and she looked me in the eye and said she loved me. She was a client that, you know, had turned her business around, and she actually said, oh, I can help you with your company. You know, I've got a team of people that can help you. You've been so helpful to me. I turned my company over to this person. About 9 months into her running my company, I'm looking at financials and they don't make any sense. And I realized that I found out that she's embezzling money from me by writing checks to fake vendors she had set up. So I had to take my company back, nearly destroyed my company that was barely holding on by a thread anyway, because I was barely holding on. And then, you know, I got into another just really toxic relationship. And I finally was like, what the hell is going on in my life? I'm like out of control. And so I joined a high profile group and with people that were so famous, they could not easily go to 12-step meetings and not get outed. And so I was in rooms with famous NFL players, NBA players, Academy Award winning actors and actresses, famous musicians, famous politicians. And I got to see in my 30s, people that were world famous, some of them literally running billion-dollar companies. Everyone in the world would know some of these people. And when I say everyone in the world, maybe not in like, you know, third world countries and stuff, but some of these people had global fame.
Wow.
And I saw how broken they were. And I realized that, wow, you know, the world can admire someone and not have any clue just how hard and how difficult. And so I started just doing a lot of work. I started going to a lot of meetings. Now I still kept running my business. I joined Strategic Coach with Dan Sullivan, who's now one of my best friends. But I just kept at it. So when people are like, you know, how'd you do it? I just never gave up. You know, you see a crack in the asphalt outside and you'll see a little weed or a little flower trying to grow through. The human spirit wants to grow. It doesn't want to give up. And there's not a single addict out there. People are like, well, they're destroying their life. They want to do that. No, first off, no one wants to destroy their life. No one wants self-sabotaging behavior. No one wants to be lonely. No one wants to be riddled with depression and anxieties. These are all part of the human condition. And I'm incredibly sensitive to that. And I know what it's like to really want to do the right thing, do your best to do it, and fail and fall in holes. You know, fortunately, I just happened to learn some skill sets that allowed me to actually make, you know, have some financial success. And I love money. I mean, people that say money can't buy happiness, you know, haven't given enough of it away to people that actually, you know, appreciate it and that you really, you know, care with. I buy happiness all the time with money. So the making of money is a really valuable thing. If you like eating nice dinners, if you like going to movies, if you like going on vacations, money gives you that access. But money could also be a success trap, you know, because you give money to a person who hasn't basically discovered who they are. You can afford vices that some people cannot. So I've seen people that literally have not dealt with underlying traumas, because I believe that addiction is a response to trauma. And if you don't address that sort of thing. So how does that all do with Genius Network and all the stuff I do today? Well, I believe that any problem in the world can be solved with the right Genius Network. So I started a really high profile group of business entrepreneurs. That's the group that you're in, you know, Genius Network, and some very successful people. And what I realize is that, you know, if I just connect other tribal leaders with each other, if I create a tribe of tribal leaders, people that have unique abilities and capabilities, and create these discussions about business where they can all get better and they could all make more money. But my trick is I sell people what they want. I give them what they need. They all want to have more clients. They all want to have a better business. But what I want to do is help any entrepreneur that's fucked up to unfuck themselves. not because I'm the guru. I mean, you know, I don't want to be a sage on the stage. I want to be a guide on the side. I just want to be a curator. I just want to bring incredible people together. And I want to really reinforce, be a giver, because life gives to the giver and takes from the taker. And as you know, in my groups, I just try to be very open, very vulnerable, because I want people to feel safe. I mean, I said this earlier. One of my favorite definitions of intimacy is intimacy, which was taught to me by a guy that I never met, but he spends his life, he's in his 70s, just helping people that have sexual addictions, men and women. And he said, intimacy is a mutual exploration of a shared safe place. Abuse is anything that takes away the safe place, and addictions are what we do to make ourselves feel good when we don't have a safe place. So I never felt safe in the world for the longest time. And the issues are in the tissues. And once I started meditating, and once I started doing float pods, and once I started learning how to breathe and doing yoga, and really getting into my body, doing somatic experiences, even doing experiences out of the country with ayahuasca and ibogaine. You know, I'm the first person in the world to have before and after brain scans of doing ibogaine and 5-MeO-DMT, which, you know, people can look that stuff up if they don't know
what
it is.
We've talked about it on the show with Rick Doblin from MAPS, and with Tim Ferriss and all.
Who's doing great work. You know, Rick Doblin's doing great work with MAPS and everything. So, yeah, so I mean, I've done a lot of trauma work, but what I've realized is like, wow, I used to be really scared all the time. I never felt safe in the world.
Did you know you were scared when you were scared? Or was it just like your condition?
I learned to ignore it to a degree, but what I did for the longest time is I always felt like there was a dark cloud following me around. I was always in a hurry to get somewhere, and as soon as I was there, I was in a hurry to be somewhere else. I couldn't sit still in my own skin. So the devil makes work for idle hands, as the cliche goes, and I just always kept busy because I was trying to outrun the dark cloud that was about to come over me and just start raining shit on my life again. And I spent a lot of time doing that. So I would go to 12-step meetings. I would go to therapy. I would do, I've spent over $2 million on my own business and personal education. I mean, I've done a lot of therapy, and just doing enough of it finally paid off. But here's what I'll tell you. People out there, well, I don't have money. I'm struggling or whatever. You know, most of the best stuff I've ever had cost nothing. Walking into a 12-step meeting, if you don't have any money, you can go to those meetings. It's people that, you know, they're there for to share experience, strength, and hope. And there's all kinds of resources, you know, doing a yoga class, exercising, sometimes a gym membership could be more valuable than a therapist, you know, so getting into your body, doing the things. And I mean, look, you're on the cutting edge of discovering, I mean, you know, 40 years of Zen that you do. I mean, there's a lot of things that with food, I mean, just, you know, food is an example. I mean, it's biochemical. I mean, your dopamine, your serotonin, your hormones. I mean, just learning how to, that totally changes your life. So there's four areas to really address to treat addiction. One is community. Nobody recovers in isolation. So you need some sort of community, 12 steps. And if you're an anti-12 step person, there's plenty of communities. I actually have a site called geniusrecovery.com, which lists every type of community, 12 steps and others, and videos and podcast links. And we're not even selling anything on the site. It's just purely
just to information help. To help.
Yeah. And so the first is community. The second is it's biochemical, it's food, it's nutrition, it's exercise, which they can learn all of that from you, reading your books, listening to, different podcasts and stuff. The third is trauma work. The issues are in the tissues. So that's where EMDR and meditation and breathing. I mean, you take tobacco, you know, the number one killer of people in the United States, the gateway drug is sugar. So more people die of things related to sugar. And then second would be tobacco. Third would be alcohol. And then fourth would be opiates currently. And so smokers is an example. When someone says you should quit smoking, well, to a smoker who, that's sometimes the only breathing that they really, the deep breathing they do, it's meditative. It actually is survival to them. So just learning how to breathe. Most addicts, they're very shallow breathers. So doing, somatic work, plant medicines can come in play. And then the fourth is the environment, the rat park studies, which I'm sure you've talked about on your
An
show.
Enriched environment that makes you not an addict because you have something interesting.
Exactly. So those four areas. And so I just started doing that in my life. I started applying that. And all of a sudden, I started feeling better. And I told this story about when I hired a yoga instructor. She said to me, I was going through grief from a breakup. And this was it was a few years ago. And she said, if you do yoga 3 times a week, it'll change your body. If you do it every day, it'll change your life. And I thought to myself, I wonder if what would happen if I did yoga every single day. I mean, I've done yoga, but I didn't do it every day. And I'm a busy guy. I travel like crazy, but I made a commitment. I'm going to do yoga, not a 10-minute YouTube video yoga. I'm going to do a real class with an instructor. I'm going to privately or go to a place. So for 31 days, I did yoga every single day. And then I took a break for like a day or two. And then I kept doing it. And over a 90-day period, I did 82 or 83 sessions of yoga. And it completely changed the way I felt in my body, but in my mind. And I actually just increased a little bit the space between reacting to life and responding to life. And most people, especially if they're in an addictive state or self-destructive state, they're not responding to life, they're reacting to life. And as you know, if they're not getting good nutrition, if they're constantly in snap mode, they're stressed. And so what are the things, and when I talk about it in a business analogy, I say, you're the $1 million racehorse. Everyone listening to this, wherever you're at in your life, think of yourself as $1 million racehorse. And if the $1 million racehorse was designed to win races, because when you win the race, you win $1 million, how would you treat that horse? You wouldn't shovel fast food down its throat. You wouldn't, you wouldn't have the horse smoke cigarettes. You wouldn't have the horse get lack of sleep. You would give it the best training, the best food, the best nutrition. You would take care of that horse, because if that horse is taken care of, that horse is going to win races. And you know what? I just started taking better care of myself. I learned how to meditate. I learned how to do some things that I wasn't doing. And more importantly, I unlearned a bunch of shit, because unlearning is more important than learning. And I now share all this stuff with all these entrepreneurs and all these successful people. And I've built this incredible business around it, because people, they want authenticity. People want safety. They want to feel like they're connected. And so now I just want to try to connect people. And that's what I do.
Joe, if someone came to you tomorrow, whether or not they have a trauma or an addiction, but just a person, said, Joe, I want to perform better at everything I do as a human being, what are the 3 most important pieces of advice you'd have for them?
Well, I would ask, and this would apply differently to different people, so I would say, what needs solved? What is your biggest problem, and how do you solve one problem that solves 100 other problems? So for instance, if someone's problem is they can't sleep well, I would say you need to solve the sleeping issue. When it comes to reading books, when it comes to anything, ask yourself the question, what needs solved? And so depending on that, for one, if they're not doing any sort of fitness or exercise, like food allows you to cope. Sleep allows you to cope. There's this proverb that he who has their health has 1,000 dreams. He or she who does not have their health has only one. So the reason anyone has ambitions or goals or desires to get better is they're not laid up in a hospital bed. They're not, chronically broken. So if you are in a state where you actually can, dream and have ambitions, and you're not in chronic pain, you're not in a hospital, then you actually have to sit and think, okay, well, what am I doing to facilitate my health? So I would certainly have them focus on exercise and health first, and I would make sure they're not fatigued. So that's the first thing. Secondly, I deal with a lot of entrepreneurs. I want to be a hero to entrepreneurs and people that have addictions. And so as our friend Dan Sullivan says, entrepreneurs that are too tightly scheduled cannot transform. So I would find whatever you need to do in your life that will give you space. I tell this to, because most of my world is successful people that are very busy. Those are at least the ones that pay me money. And I've said this a lot of times, do yoga every day for a month. Go and get a massage every day. I mean, I know it sounds crazy, but have you ever,
it matters.
Most people, that are successful, you can spend $60, $100 on a massage. You can spend more if you want. And you do that every single day. And they're like, that could be a lot of money. I can spend $3,000 to $6,000 if you're going to go to expensive hotels and get massages. But you know what you're going to do with that time while you're taking your body down? So I would do an enormous amount of self-care, and I would cut all ties with dishonest, negative, and lazy people. Only align yourself with people that are aligned with you. Your environment matters. And like your phone is an example. So people are like, get off your phone. But they don't realize that when you tell like a young person or a person to get off their phone, we have become so integrated. It's no longer a phone. We have outsourced our brain. It's where we drive. I mean, most people can't drive anywhere unless, that they've never been to before without looking at, an electronic GPS that's going to take them there, or finding restaurants by looking at, Yelp or someplace to find. I mean, we've we communicate, and so much of our life is integrated into, you know, our technology. So people really need to have space. And so I would encourage people to read like a book like Deep Work by Cal Newport, and literally, you know, do what you need to do electronically, but don't tie your life into it, because marketing today is algorithms, and marketing today is all of these technology companies that employ attention engineers, and they're trying to suck up every bit of attention they can. So I would give yourself space. I mean, and all this is basic stuff. Go in nature, exercise, eat well, get yourself sunshine, get yourself proper sleep, and probably apply all the biohacking stuff. And here's what I would say. Most people, because I know we have to wrap up here. We have a whole group of people waiting for us for dinner downstairs as we're doing this. You know, there's a lot of different people that are offering biohacking, and they're offering sort of things. But if you resonate with a person, don't read. Like, I've read a shit ton of books. Don't just read a book, master a book. If you like what Dave Asprey is actually teaching, don't read a million books. Don't join a bunch of different groups. Don't listen to 50 different podcasts. It's obsessive. Go really deep and actually apply the stuff that you're learning. You're better off mastering one book that works, and actually trying the stuff. Don't read this shit for entertainment. You know, like when people say 12-step groups don't work, it's like, I went to meetings, it didn't work. Well, I say to people, it's not an attendance group, it's a step group. You don't join a gym and sit on the bench and not lift the weights and say gyms don't work. So if someone's following your advice, they should actually apply your advice, and they should not get distracted by things that are going to give you conflicting things, and give it a shot. And if Dave's stuff doesn't work, then jump into something else, you know, but give it a real shot. Yeah. And the thing is people just jump around. They go very shallow with everything. My advice is go deep. Go deep with people that matter. Mm-hmm. Go deep with advice that matters. It's your life. It's important. Go deep with it.
Joe, thanks for your work, and just thanks for being willing to be exceptionally vulnerable and just talk about all the stuff that you've been through, and to just demonstrate you can be successful and happy no matter what you've been through, and that people who are successful oftentimes have the same things. I think this is something that very few successful people talk about. We might talk about it over dinner when we know no one's listening and all that, but you're just out there in public and still just full of compassion and love and giving. It's very unusual, and it takes a special kind of courage. So thank you for doing that act of service for people. And thanks for Genius Network. Like, it's absolutely changed how I think about my business and what I do to serve people. And so a lot of times you talk about how that one guy changed things for you when you were out jet skiing. And you know, sitting down at the first Genius Network, really, I was like, man, I thought I was thinking big, but really, you know, there's another level, and you helped me see it. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Where can people find out, like, geniusnetwork.com, anywhere you want to
see? You know, Joe Polish, my name, you can Google me, but, you know, joepolish.com links to a bunch of stuff and things related to addiction. Go to Genius Recovery, and we're really building that out. And that's my whole goal and my mission right now, is to really build that out. And I hope people out themselves. In the past, people had to be anonymous because there was like a lot of judgment and a lot of persecution, but you cannot punish pain out of people, and you're not going to punish pain out of yourself. And if you're fighting a silent battle, remember that you're as sick as your secrets, and there are people out there that will help you and seek it out. And I hope that more people will come out and say, hey, yeah, I've been successful, or my life's a train wreck, but I'm challenging you to these things because the world needs to have a more compassionate approach. And I really appreciate you giving me a platform to actually share this message, and for also being who you are. So
thanks.
Yeah. And so I wish everyone that's listening to us the very best. And I hope whatever we talked about is valuable to them, and they go do good work.
If you liked today's episode, you know what to do. Go to geniusrecovery.com if it could be helpful for you, or, you know, go listen to Joe's podcast, which is I Love Marketing.
Yeah, ilovemarketing.com, 10xtalk.com with Dan Sullivan, and geniusnetwork.com, and they can find out all about that stuff.
Yeah. Nice. And if you don't do that, just do something nice for yourself. Do something nice for someone else. It actually matters. It makes you perform better as a human being, too.
Yeah, and I have a new book out, too, that's coming out by the time they listen to this.
Oh, no kidding. All right, let's talk about your book just real quick. Miracle Morning with Hal Elrod, who's also been on the show, but this is Miracle Morning for Addiction Recovery.
Yeah, with Hal and Anna David and myself. And so that's our first addiction recovery book, and that'll just give you a whole process in the morning of how to, you can apply it to if you're struggling with addiction, or if you have a family member or friend is. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you so much, Dave.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.